Dang it. What was I saying? The human dongle.
Oh, get your finger out of my eye.
Way better now that you've stopped touching it.
Yes, I was...
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
Watch.
Welcome back to Oklahoma. Okay, welcome back to Okla Said. It is the official Okla Ed podcast. I am Erin Barnes, and Scott Hazelwood is here with me.
Live and in person. Hi, Scott.
So you can find Scott on the Twitter sphere at TeachFromHere, and I am at eBarnes73 on the Twitters. Mm-hmm. So follow us. And if you want to follow the podcast, you can follow at Okla Said.
That is correct.
All right.
Yes.
So you hosted this week's Twitter chat,
and sure
it was
enough.
Awesome. This was a really thoughtful. You put the questions out here, and I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a thinker.
It was. A couple of the responses came back with, "These are really hard questions."
I quit.
Like, I'm just watching now. they were her questions, and one of the questions, we'll get to it in a minute, but one of the things was, you know, what barriers are preventing you from being able to do this, and a couple of the participants were like, time, I just don't have enough time. And my response to that was, let's pretend time isn't an issue,
right?
Take the time part out, and if time wasn't an issue, what would you want to know, what would you want to do?
Do you want to dive in?
Yeah, let's do.
Okay.
Question one.
Yes.
Can I read it? Can I read all the questions? Yes. It's my chat.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Do it.
No. We'll stick with our formula. It works.
Okay. How would you define teacher action research? And so we heard your definition of it in the interview, but it was great reading the different variations throughout, you know, the transcript here. Mm-hmm. Did you find any that you were like, that's not right?
No, they all sort of centered around the teacher in the classroom, which is one of the most important things. But some of them were not as specific as I would have imagined it to be.
Okay.
It was like a group effort or collaborative, or somebody comes in and watches me do the thing and then lets me know. But for the most part, there was a wide variety.
After listening to your interview, I know now that the answer I picked for question one is probably not as thorough as it needs to be. So I went with Christy Cooper, who is at ChrisCoop80 on the Twitter, and she says, always improving by observing colleagues and their practices, self-evaluating, and seeking PD. Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily right. Which means I didn't have my teacher action research definition exactly right.
I would add to that self-evaluating and seeking PD is then self-evaluating what? Like, be super specific with that. What exactly are you looking for? Well, I could have done a better job teaching that lesson. So in what way? Or what thing about, you know, what specific practice are you doing in your classroom that you just are super curious about that is a problem or whatever?
Right.
But yeah, always improving is part of what happens through the action research process. Like, you're going to be a better teacher on the other side. So,
yeah.
Who'd you
pick?
I went with Jennifer Burris. She is at JBurris8. She said, problem-based, applicable, data-driven, action-oriented, teacher ownership, powerful, transformational. And I really liked that one because it is. You're looking at a problem. You're applying it to your practice. You're looking at data that's generated from that. You're taking an action based on that. You're owning it. And then when you do all of that, the other two occur.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was a really good one. And I think, is it Oklahoma, one of the Oklahoma professional development folks was tweeting in this, and they were also sharing some really good resources on teacher action research. I think
OPSRC?
No, it wasn't them. It was the other one. I think we'll come to it. What aspects of your teaching practice are you interested in taking a deep dive into, and why?
So I went with a different approach to picking my answers here for a little bit, and then I go back to normal. But I liked what Vicki Donnelly put in this one. I liked her tweet for question two, and I chose it. And then that made my decision making for the next several, be revolving around Vicki Donnelly's mm-hmm. tweet here. Mm-hmm. And so she says, I would like to look at how I assess the way I teach, the way teaching styles have changed, the ways of assessing have to comply. And I was like, ooh, boom, I love that. Yes, you're right. And so I put it in there. Mm-hmm. And then on your question three, you want to dive into question two. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to stick with Vicki and see her thought process in here.
That's a good idea. So I'm going to
stick with Vicki for a few tweets here.
Okay, that sounds good.
But I really liked that tweet.
I did too, because what she's addressing there is that specific problem in her class.
Exactly.
So I like that. I went with Missy Martin Bear. She's at Missy Martin Bear 1. She said, with my student-centered and led classroom, I'm interested in learning techniques that encourage them to go all in while promoting peer group instruction. I want my students to take the lead while I serve as a guide. And again, she's pointing out a specific thing that she's wanting to look at.
I like it. Hey, so, I mean, I don't know if it will help or not, but I found a really good website, and people probably are like, that website's been around for 25 years.
Everybody is not. Yeah, when Al Gore created the internet,
I know, right?
Then he created this website.
PBISworld.com.
PBIS
World. So we all know what PBIS is, but PBISworld.com. You can pick the behavior that you're seeing, and it will give you interventions. So if I've got an impulsive kid, mm-hmm. I can click on impulsive, and if it's like, this is what the student may be displaying, and then is this what your student is? And you're like, yeah, maybe, kind of, that's what it is. And you click yes, and then it's like, here are some interventions for you. And I was like, whoa, that was really cool. And so if you are trying to go to a more student-centered approach, especially in, peer-to-peer stuff, flipping, she's got the student-centered and led classroom, this PBISworld.com interventions list is huge and could probably help just shaping behaviors that happen in your classroom as you start moving towards that approach. Anyway.
All right. Good share.
Thank you. So question three.
Yes.
Taking a deeper examination of your answer in question two, what problem is related to that aspect of your teaching? Good question, Scott.
So this was, the intention here is to have you consider what you just shared. So if you shared something specific, this should allow you to really examine the problem that you're wanting to investigate.
And I had that feeling, so I really liked it. So Vicki Donnelly, I chose her again because that's who I chose for that Q2. She says, change. All the tools and support are there. I have to do the changing. And sometimes, honestly, that's hard. You know what? I liked this tweet anyway, even if I hadn't chose her for number two, because I mean she's taking ownership of it, and she realizes that the change is on her, and she knows that. Anyway, liked your tweet again, Vicki.
So Cindy Johnson is at Johnson Math. She said, my problem is that it is so easy to slide back into the old easy ways of teaching high school math, lecture followed by time to work on an assignment day after day. Avoid the problems that make students really think I must strive to grow or my students will not grow. And so she's addressing, this is a specific, now here's the root of the problem. How do I, and it goes sort of along the lines of what Vicki was saying, how do I make those changes that stick?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Question four. Keeping your previous answers in mind, how could you develop an environment where you could document what you are seeing or not seeing in the classroom? And so now, if Vicki or whoever applies that change, just document what you see.
Right. Vicki, she says, seeing and using results for Mastery Connect. And on that one, I felt a little like, Vicki, and you have to do it your way.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, that was the way I felt initially, because I was like, oh, we're relying on this program, to, you know, anyway, do the assessing. But then I was like, you know what? Actually, that's good because there are tons of teachers out there. Because we have to benchmark, mm-hmm. we do the benchmark, mm-hmm. and then we check that box off and don't necessarily use the data. What she's saying here is not just doing the benchmark, but using the results, and maybe that's forming the next lesson or the next, you know, unit. I don't know.
And if she changes how she is assessing, she can also get student feedback or interview or survey type data.
Right. Right.
So
who'd you choose?
I went with Kimberly Blodgett. She said more student-led activities would free up some time. Have a peer observe, video yourself, have your students give you feedback. Feedback doesn't have to be a one-way street. And she's right there. So as you're examining this problem, consider all the different ways that you could get input from this. We forget that we can video our classes, I think. We forget that we can give a survey to students and have them fill it out. We forget that we could... you know, have one-on-one interviews or group interviews with students to get their feedback on things. We forget that right. We can combine all of that with you know, student whatever data, test data, attendance data. You know, there's a lot of things I think sometimes we forget.
No, absolutely. Well, question five related to question four. How can you consistently and methodically document what's happening in your classroom? Mm-hmm. And she says, I'm not sure. Use my data sheet? I like it. She's got, you know, question marks here. These questions are making me think too hard, and I won't have any thinking cells left for tomorrow.
And that was the thing. You know, I'm asking these questions. They're hard questions, and you got about 6 or 7 minutes in between questions to answer.
No, I know.
I mean, so, yeah, I feel your pain, Vicky. By design,
I feel really hard.
Really hard. I went with Mrs. S. Kindergarten Rocks. She said, this is the part I'm terrible at because I've always been told to record somehow in a written fashion, journaling, online log, etc. I think I communicate more effectively when I'm talking, so maybe record a video or audio notes. Plus, it saves time. And yeah, that's it. You just need to be consistent with it. You know, every afternoon, take 20 minutes, document what you saw in some fashion.
Exactly.
Question six.
Yes.
What are some first steps you can take to organize an in-depth study of one aspect of your practice?
So this is where I moved. I was like, all right, I've put enough on Vicky. I'll move on, okay? And she was done thinking anyway. Yeah. So.
It has been declared the thinking cells are used.
Done. Anyway, so I went with Jack Reed on this one. He is JL Reed 2011 on the Twitters. Go follow him. He says, the first step I can take to organize an in-depth study of...
One.
Thank you. One aspect of my practice would be to do SWOT analysis to identify the area that will influence my students the most. And I was like, oh my goodness, I just put together an SWOT table. I'd never heard of it before. And so I picked that so that I could tell people what SWOT meant.
SWAT.
It's like, right? Except for SWOT. Anyway, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Right. And I like the table because with one issue, you can figure out all of that.
Yes.
And I think it helps you just, I don't know, it makes one issue multifaceted and you can dissect every piece of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that was good. I almost picked that one.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. But you picked.
I got in there first.
But you got in first this time. Yeah, it was a blank slate for you today. So I went with Deborah Thornton at DJ Thornton. She said, I risk sounding like a broken record, but working toward national board certification walks you through this process and has ways to ensure it is making a difference. What Deborah Thornton was saying, though, we had a side conversation about national board, and she said national board has taken a tilt more towards an action research view of how they do the National Board Certification. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. So. Well, question seven.
Yeah.
What are some potential barriers that you may have to overcome? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I thought I'd see a lot of policy, you know, type things, because it's easy to call the legislature your scapegoat, you know?
Right. I don't have time because of all the mandates.
Right. But I didn't see a whole lot of that. And no. So I was, you know, pleased. Rick Cobb, though, did say sometimes the greatest challenge is wanting to improve when you're just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. Teachers need time, resources, and support. There's no shortage of great ideas out here. Right. And I loved that. I mean, we do. We have a bunch of ideas. Join Okla Ed any Sunday night, and you can see the ideas. I mean, we're a bevy of ideas.
Oh, man, everywhere.
But one person is doing that idea and sharing it out with, you know, the 100 people that are, you know, in the chat, and da 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 da. And then I'm like, oh, yes, I want to do that. And then Monday comes and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm still doing this, you know. Mm-hmm. So I really liked that. And I really liked him saying, you know, that we're just trying to survive, because sometimes, and I mean, let's face it, we have a lot of emergency cert people out here. And right. So even if they've taught for more than 1 year, I mean, because you can, you know, emergency cert weird ways around. You're in a new subject, or, you know, whatever. Anyway, so there are just a crap ton of people who are emergency certified and in their first or second or third year of teaching, and we are still kind of just trying to survive at that point.
Right. Yeah, it's so hard to be intentional when you're still trying to get your legs under you.
Exactly. Yeah. That's, and so I thank you for saying that so shortly, how I was like saying it with 1,000 words.
It's okay.
Okay.
You're the best, Aaron. Ms. S., who is at Kindergarten Rocks, she said the potential or almost certainty of making myself and colleagues uncomfortable, but growth doesn't happen in comfort. And this is hard too, because you may come in with certain assumptions about things and find out they're totally wrong, or the processes that you hold near and dear turn out to not be good for your class. And so that's an uncomfortable situation.
Right.
And sometimes just a close examination of yourself is uncomfortable. Like, oof, I forgot to wash back there. It's a little dirty. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, my goodness. No, I do. stay away from Scott at PD.
It's a little dirty back there. Question 8, how can you overcome the barriers that you listed in question 7? So again, all of this is designed to help you just sort of get the ball rolling. Like,
yes.
Ignore, you know, let's admit what the barriers are. Let's how are we going to get over them?
Right. Jack Reed here, he said, communication is key to overcome the barriers. I have to be able to show how well my students are doing despite the challenges they overcome on a daily basis. I have to find a way to let all stakeholders know growth, even if academic scores mask the potential. And I was like, man, that's a great tweet. And that just reminds me of how important, you know, my job this year is. And these administrators that have come before me and are doing their, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th, 13th year of what I'm doing this year, boy, I just have so much to learn. I really do.
Right.
And yeah, I can't wait till year 3. Maybe I'll have
please, dear Lord, let me survive to year 3.
And not be in survive mode. Like, seriously, like everything Dr. Cobb just said and Jack just said, I'm like, oh, yeah, like I'm a first year too now. So anyway.
I went with Steve Gilland. He's got year 3 under his belt, Aaron.
Yes, he does.
He said, if everything is a priority, then nothing is a priority. So say no, or it can wait a little more. If it helps students, get it done. And yes. I think that's a really good thing, because teacher action research, guess who it's going to help in the long run? It's going to help your students. So, our pastor once had time did a sermon series over creating margin in your life, and one of the things that he talked about all through that was say no to things that are good, so that you can say yes to things that are great.
Man, I'm really glad you found a way to get that into the podcast, because you told me that exact thing last week and it wasn't on record. And so I'm really glad that you said that on the podcast.
Well, but it goes with what Steve said here too. I mean, in teachers, I think by nature, teachers sort of have to be people pleasers, because that's what we do. We work with a lot of people, and we don't get much done if we can't be agreeable with folks. And I think sometimes part of that agreeable with folks is just saying yes to everything, because this is going to be good for the kids, or this is going to be good for that, or this is going to be good for the building, or this is going to be... And sometimes we have to say no to all these good things, so that when this one thing comes through and it can be great for your building or great for your students, that is something you can say yes to, because you have margin to do it.
Right. So, I like it.
Yeah, this was a tough chat, and I appreciate everybody that contributed.
Well, and you didn't have a question 9, 10 bonus, lightning round, or anything. You just left it there.
I don't do those bonus questions. You know, it's just the next question number in the row.
But we do have some Boom Sauce tweets.
Darn so, tootin'.
My Boom Sauce this week goes out to Rick Cobb, and he was answering question 8, which was, how can you overcome the barriers listed in question 7? He said, well, I already voted this week, so...
You only get one of them. You only get to vote one time.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I went with Kimberly Blodgett, and hers was in response to question 7, which was, you know, what are some potential barriers you may have to overcome? And she said, be prepared for some criticism. We can't grow or learn if all feedback were positive. That's not even real. So if you ask for it, be ready to receive it and turn it into a growing experience.
Yep. So I like that.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so next week on the Twitter chat, Dr. Phil, you're definitely going to want to tune in. Dr. Phil
not,
will be...
Not that Dr. Phil. Not that Dr. Phil.
Oh.
Okay. Not Oprah's friend.
Okay.
But if it'll get us more listens, it'll be Oprah's friend, Dr. Phil.
I wasn't even going to say it wasn't. I was just going to leave it there. It says right here, Dr. Phil is going to be in the house. Well, Steve Gilliland and Dr. Phil Campbell will be co-hosting, co-moderating. Failure is not an option. And failure should be an option. But I can't wait to hear about their spin on this.
I think it'll be fascinating.
I do too.
And
that'll happen. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the last time Steve hosted, so Steve has never hosted a chat. Now, within like 2 months, he's hosted two of them. But in Steve's last chat, he referenced Dr. Phil Campbell, and Dr. Phil Campbell ended up coming in to chat a little for that, and now they're doing it together, and I think that's awesome.
Yes. No, I was really excited. He told me that Dr. Phil had said he'd be willing to during the last time we interviewed. So I knew that this was kind of coming. I didn't know it was coming so quickly.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about this chat. This will be great.
Yeah. It happens if you want to join us at 8. Well, this one has already happened, but all of our chats happen on Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, Chicago time, whatevs. And so you should join us for the chat, like, and then we can talk about your tweet.
Hey, our chat is so amazing. It made it into mainstream media, guys. The Daily Oklahoman had an article about it.
Yes, I saw that. And they were talking about how a group of people use a hashtag to make things happen.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
I thought so too. I was pretty pleased.
Pretty amazing.
All right. Well, you gotta do the sign off.
Do I do the sign off?
You do.
So how does it go? Is it the?
So it goes like. All right, educators, you know what to do. Go out and dominate the world. Now you just put your spin on it.
Okay, hold on. I gotta write this down. Okay, so it goes. Okay, say it again. It goes what? It goes.
You do the sign off. Ready? What?
All right, educators, you know what to do. You get out there and you research yourself, and you find out what works in your classroom, and then you tell us how it goes and dominate the world.
That was perfect.
We're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, okay.